Rob Parsh.
Central Avenue.
We're all about the Sunshine City. RadioCP.com.
RadioCP.com presents the Homemade Broadcast.
This is a Homemade Broadcast radio production.
Space vehicle free count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 497. My name's Will Koontz, and I'm always joined by my friend. She's got a nice hot tea. It's Anna Hummel.
Yes, I do. Hello. Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're feeling well enough to do this podcast.
Yeah, it started off a little rough. I returned from my mini vacation, sailing the high seas on a Virgin Voyages boat, paid for, donated by my friend Kayer, and it was a good time. I'm back. I did not feel well. I did text you when I got back. Was almost positive, certain that I had COVID, but I think I was just wiped, completely wiped.
Did you ever have that confirmed, that theory confirmed, or... At this point, it's useless. No one cares about that status anymore. It is what it is.
I was like, look, if I don't feel good, I'll stay home and not go anywhere. Luckily, I work from home during the day. I texted Johnny in the morning and I said, I think I'm going to do the show from home. I might have COVID. And he goes, okay, no problem. But then I ended up going in later in the day. I felt better. It's, I don't know. Have you ever been on a cruise ship?
Nope.
Do you think you'd like it?
I don't want to go.
Okay.
That's a little... And Chris, my boyfriend, for those that don't know, has been talking about a cruise pretty much since I met him. And I feel like I keep shooting it down because I feel like if you kind of do a bargain cruise, I feel like there's a lot of riffraff on those ships. And I remember Tim Dillon said something, the great Tim Dillon said something about it being a floating toilet. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly just how I feel about it. I'd rather like go to a country and explore versus be on a ship with, 2,000 other people.
Yeah. I'm not that's what I really learned from this cruise. Now, obviously,
is this your first cruise?
No, I've been on the riffraff cruises a few times, and I was like, I'm never going on another cruise again. But when this opportunity presented itself, it was, a little bit nicer of a line, more
what
expensive.
Was it, Virgin?
Virgin. Yeah. And obviously I'm not gonna, it was free. So that's even better.
Yeah. Yeah. I do free things. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think I learned that I'm not a cruise guy.
And why is that?
Well, it's like being in a nice prison kind of, the rooms are now, they did have very nice rooms that were suites, but we kind of just had the pleb cabin. Which was still nice. Don't get me wrong.
Not upgraded or something.
No, we missed the upgrade. We booked too late to get upgraded. But yeah, it was like two small beds with me and my buddy Dan, and like we're farting and crapping in the small area. And there's just not much to do. Now there is. There's a nightlife that's on the boat, but it's. I don't want to. It's just like dudes dress up as chicks dancing around, like literally. There's just like drag queens performing, singing songs, and I'm just like, okay, I don't have no interest in that. I don't care if it was girls out there singing songs, I have no interest in that. But so the only thing is to do is drink and gamble.
Oh, sorry.
And drugs too. Drink and gamble. That's essentially what I did for 4 days. Someone who's susceptible genetically and just by predilection to alcohol, I was doing like fireball shots at 10:30 in the morning and just like drinking till 3 every day.
So 3 a.m. or?
Yeah. Yeah. Like going all night long some nights and then waking up early, taking a fireball shot. That's really all there is to do. There's food and stuff too. The restaurants are pretty good. Still cruise food though. There's only so much they can do on a cruise ship.
What? Why is that? I mean, you can't have a full-fledged kitchen or...
No, they do. Oh, they had full-fledged restaurants on this one. But... I
mean, what do you mean it's cruise? What is that? It's just not as fresh or...
Yeah, I mean, I would say compared to the pleb cruises that I've been on in the past with all the riffraff, it was much nicer. Much nicer food, better quality food. I didn't feel sick after I ate, which was nice. It was kind of hard to get food, though. It wasn't like a buffet style, which part of me was like, I wish there was a big buffet of food right here so I could just go pig out.
It's always available. Yeah, it's the accessibility that you want. I get that.
But also at the same time, I'm like, there's not people coughing and sneezing and farting on this food, so I won't get sick when I eat it. So that, which is probably for the best. But yeah, it's funny because I was talking to my buddy Dan about it, and he was like, you didn't have a good time? I go, no, I had a great time. I just don't want to do it again. You know, I don't want to go on a boat, on a cruise ship again. He goes, oh, that's weird because I love it. And I think it's just a personality trait. Either there's cruise people, yeah, not cruise people, that type of thing.
Now, can you not be a cruise person, but you've never been on a cruise, but everything about it is like, I don't like that stuff. I wouldn't want to. I avoided my pool, Will, that I lived at. I lived in an apartment complex, and I believe you went to the pool. We like sat around the pool maybe one time. And I lived there for 7 years, and I probably hung out there, I'm not kidding, 5 times. That's pushing it. Because there were often other people there. And by other people, I mean more than one other person there. And I'm like, oh, there's people at the pool, so I don't want to go to the pool. But on a cruise, I feel like the pool, or maybe pools, are like a central community area where most people hang out during the day. Mm. And that would make me not want to hang out there.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. The cruise is very similar to that. I didn't go in the pool on the boat once. There was
did you hang out at the pool? No, I feel like that. No. No.
There was no hot people on this cruise.
Well, I mean, wasn't there some sun? I was more like, is there sun and you're drinking in the sun?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like they let us off in one day it was Bimini, and they took us to like their private beach, and that was awesome. Okay. That was probably the best day. And then we had
is that the picture that I saw on Facebook?
Yes.
Okay. Yep,
that was the one.
That was a good group pick. That was a solid group pick.
Yeah. Johnny said it looked like an Old Navy commercial with how diverse
it was. I was like trying to be like, oh, is that a sheep? Oh, that's nice. Like, is that Dan's girl? Nope.
Yeah, no, it was, there were some people there that I knew, and it's mostly like kind of my buddy's friends, but we're friends too, but like we've only met each other in person, hung out a few times, always had a good time hanging out. I kind of had an incident where I thought this dude was joking, but it turned out that he wasn't.
Ooh, that can be tricky.
Yeah. So the first night we went to this place called Gunbae. It's a Korean barbecue place. And in this place, now this is funny because I'll tell you, well, let me just tell you what happened. There was a game that was played during at this restaurant where everybody pounded a table and yelled Gunbae. And then they pointed at you and you said a number and then you had to divide by a certain number. I didn't know how to play. I was way too drunk. But
of course, at an Asian restaurant, they want to play math games, but go on.
Yes, exactly. And it was an Asian waiter, too. I don't know what division he was in. I don't know if he was Korean or Japanese or what, but I know he was of Asian predilection. And the guy who said this is Korean, and he goes, I kind of felt microaggressed in there. And we thought he was kidding. Because,
oh, you mean like one of the people in your party? Like,
yes. Yeah. Okay. And we laughed about it and thought I was like, that's a good joke.
You're Asian.
It's a funny joke. Yeah. But later we found out that he wasn't kidding. And he kind of gave.
How did you find out?
Because the next day we flat out asked him. He goes, oh, no, I wasn't kidding. We're like, oh, oops. Apologies went around, all that stuff.
White people.
So I said, well, he goes, imagine if you're in an Irish bar or German bar and people are going, cheers, cheers, cheers.
Oh, my God.
And what I did that. I imagined myself in that situation and I went, that's fine.
You should have been like, I get it.
I was just like,
ridiculous.
That's a little weird. Okay. So then I actually got microaggressed at this restaurant though, because I showed up, I had to find a bathroom. That's a whole other story. It was kind of, tough to find a bathroom. It's not labeled pretty well. I was also drunk the entire time, so maybe I just wasn't looking close enough. But anyway, I came back. It was my turn to order. I'm rushing to find something. And the waiter goes, you want chicken with sauce? and shook his head, got really close to me, meaning just orange chicken. Come on, white chubby boy, you know you want some orange chicken. That's what you like. And I went, no! And I ordered some beef thing, and then I was like, damn it, I should have got orange chicken. That guy was right. I do love orange chicken, and I didn't get any. And it looked so good, too. But, you know, that. So I got really my... I kind of got microaggressed there.
Yeah, what does this have to do with the bathroom?
Because I went to the bathroom, and I showed up late to order. And it was like panic mode at that point. And that's when he's just like, you want orange chicken?
Yeah.
So, and then before that, I said something too, and the guy that got microaggressed was like, so I have fancy friends too. Some of the Indian couple that was there, Shiv and Aparna, his beautiful wife, they're Indian. They're very fancy folks. Okay.
Well,
they like the finer things.
I never met her, but I did meet him. And I remember we were at a barbecue, and I think he brought like his own pots and pans.
Yes.
To make like a prime rib. It was some
Wagyu prime rib.
Right. It was a fancy cut of meat.
It was like a $1,000 piece of meat that he brought.
He brought his own sea salt, I think. Yes. Like, okay.
So I said that I was making a joke, obviously.
Oh, well.
And I said, oh my God, I'm surprised they didn't show up in robes. I was expecting some fancy robes in here. And the guy who was microaggressed went, oh man, that's racist. Come on. And I was like, what?
Because you didn't mean because they were Indian, you just mean because they're fancy, right? Well, even if you did, but
the fact of the matter is we were at a Korean place, an Asian place. They're not Asian, they're Indian. Yeah. So I was more making a point that they're very fancy. That's what the joke was. But he took the racial aspect of it. So I kind of just like, you know, kind of shook that off. And there was little things throughout the trip where it was I didn't know what was real, obviously I don't want to, you know, hurt his feelings or offend him or anything, but also I felt like I had to walk on eggshells, and so did a lot of other people during that trip.
Just the one dude, or was it other people?
Just the one. And I asked Ben, the guy who's kind of the conduit between us, because he's friends with them, we're friends with Ben, and then we kind of lump in together as one group. I was like, yeah, I can't tell. He goes, I don't think he's serious. And I go, I don't know, dude. I think he's serious. And he goes, oh, maybe that's why he kind of gave me crap about wish, because his girlfriend's Mexican. And Ben said Feliz Cumpleaños to her for her birthday, which is happy birthday in Espanol. And he kind of got like, what the hell, man, type of thing about that. But it was very, which sucks because I've had such a good time with that person. I don't want to feel that way around them, but that's.
Well, did you? Because it sounds like there were like several different instances where he was being a little bitch. So
yeah, it was unfortunate, but overall, he was never like mad or upset. He would just kind of, if he saw something that he felt was egregious, he would say something and just kind of check.
I've had people do that to me too, and I'd probably be more comfortable if they just called me out for being a racist or, well, when I said something I maybe shouldn't have said, I used the R word, and I was talking about myself and being like drunk or something, I don't know, something like that. And I got a talking to, like I said it. And then a few minutes later it was like, hey, listen, I know you used that word, blah, 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 but you probably shouldn't. It takes all the wind out of your sails.
Yeah. I had a moment like that with when I was doing the medical show that I do, the brokered show on Saturday mornings. I had the guy in from the I can't remember his name on the top of my head, but really good guy. But he was like the chairman of the Tampa Bay Down Syndrome Association, and it came into that word is never appropriate ever. And I was like, well, I mean, it's a medical term, right? I mean, there's a fire retardant, right? I mean, like that. But I had to pull myself back and go, yep. Just not to ruffle any feathers there, you know, especially for a show like that. If it was the Johnny B show or something, or this thing, maybe I would have pushed back on that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the thing with words is that you could just use other words that mean the same thing. So what the hell's the difference? This is where we're at with our society and culture now. Instead of R word, I say low IQ now. But guess what low IQ means? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, so. Bubba, and by proxy me now, you know, instead of saying the R word, he goes, well, he was a little brr, brr, brr. So, like, which is worse? Like, that is worse than calling them.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can get away with calling someone a little brr, brr, brr. So we just say that instead.
That
which
works.
Is honestly more fun than saying the R word. So
true. True. I mean, the R word is more clinical, certainly, than that. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's worse. So is that's so much worse than just saying it. But whatever. I mean, I can't, you know, however people feel, they feel. And you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them with that stuff. So it's just not worth it. So I'll say low IQ instead. But when I say that, now you know the code. You can crack the code. So, yeah, that was the only really uncomfortable thing about the cruise, other than sleeping in a twin bed with my buddy right next beside me. That was nice and not at the same time, you know?
Were you really farting on each other?
Oh, I was bad.
Well, imagine if all you're doing is drinking and eating. It's probably not good for your GI, so.
Yeah, I made sure I brought a bunch of medications with me. I wanted to make sure I didn't embarrass myself. Or I brought all the Gazex, the anti-acids, all that stuff.
Does that really work? Does that help?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I brought probiotics. I took those, too. Really, that definitely helps a lot. So I was up the first night. I brought some money. I had money in a piggy bank that I kind of saved cash over the years in, and I had like a good chunk of cash. Like I think I had $1,000 that I took on this boat, and I was like, I'm gonna lose this at a blackjack table. I'm okay with it. This is what I'm gonna do. And I ended up going up the first night 1500 on the blackjack table, and I never win anything. I never win at blackjack. I knew I was going to lose. So I told everybody, texted, you know, a lot of people, my mom and dad and stuff. And they're like, stop playing. You won. Don't play anymore. But again, because it is a cruise ship and it's either watch some men dressed up as ladies sing songs and dance around, or you can play cards. I chose the cards.
Let me ask you this. So you won $1,500 from your $1,000, or did you put down like $100 and from that you won $1,500?
I was $1,500 up from that. So I never even got into my original pot at that point. I was $1,500 up. Does that make sense? So I still had my $1,000 and I had $1,500 on top of that.
Okay.
So I got you. What I did was I just played $500 because it was four nights total. So it's all gone now. I think I came home with $200 extra than what I left with.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're still up at the end of the day.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. The $1,500 would have been a lot nicer. However,
sure.
You know, I kind of played for free.
What else were you supposed to do on the cruise?
Yeah.
You didn't hang out by the pool at all.
No, no.
But you did have a beach day or two. So I guess that's all right.
We had beach day. We did Key West one day, walked around, you know, Duval and stuff. That was cool. I love Key West. I'm actually going back there in December. So you should go to that.
Yes, I believe your girl is turning 30, the big 3-0.
Yeah.
And you'll be
39. Yeah. Hurts.
Yeah.
Hurts real bad.
Yeah. I feel like you just turned 35 last week when you had the kickball deal.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do another kickball game this year.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, fun.
I got to figure that out ASAP.
Oh, is it the 23rd? 3rd or 4th is Thanksgiving?
23rd, I think, is Thanksgiving. Okay. The 25th.
So your birthday is that Saturday.
Is that Saturday? So that'd be a good day to do it, I think, the actual day.
That'd be a great day to do it because everyone's going to have that weekend off, anyways.
Yeah.
Like Thursday to Monday, pretty much. So
I should actually probably figure that out as soon as possible. All you have to do is, I think, call up Parks and Rec Service and, you know, make available a field.
Yeah.
Because we did that last time, and really the only thing was they were supposed to open a bathroom, and they just did not do that. So,
I definitely tinkled. I feel like I tinkled somewhere I wasn't supposed to.
Oh, I was over the field. All over the field.
Yeah, I mean, but a field is open, so you're trying to get a little bit of privacy. But I did something like naughty, I feel like.
You did number twos out there.
No,
like
I didn't do number twos, thankfully. That would have been really bad, but I feel like I didn't wipe or something. Like, I did something gross.
Well, I mean, sorry. You're sweating and stuff anyways. It all kind of accumulates together.
I know,
all the liquid.
But I didn't, I was just like, ooh.
Yeah, Yeah. So not used to that. No. Mm-mm. Not good. Not good. Yeah. So I got to work on that. That's what I'm going to make my mission be. I accepted another job and then just didn't follow up as soon as I got back. I was sick.
Wait. So you hold on. So you finally get this job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're not doing this job.
I don't think so. Okay. No. It was like, it's not like a job that's lucrative. It's a really menial wait. And listen, no disrespect to anybody out there. You know, you got to do what you got to do. I hear that. It would have been good for my bank account to have a little bit extra, but also, you know, it's not going to be that much extra. So I'd rather spend my time looking for another thing, I think.
Okay.
You know. The cruise was a big wake-up call. I do feel bad, though, because I went through the whole process. And then just as soon as I got back, I was just like,
I don't think so. What do you mean it was a wake-up call? Just because you felt like a degenerate when you got back? Or?
Well, I was sick when I got back. So I didn't, you know, I think I was supposed to show up on Tuesday. I was sick on Monday and then just didn't. They called me on Tuesday and I just didn't answer.
Yeah, so, it happens.
Yeah, not good, but whatever. You know, speaking of cruises and just living a life of degeneracy and fun, sorry, I thought that was I do have a phone call, but I hope it's not important. What about mimosa bars and all you can drink mimosas? Are you a fan of those at restaurants?
No.
Why? No. Why?
Because usually I want like a mimosa, maybe two, but I typically don't want bottomless.
It's not worth it.
I know where the story is going.
It's not worth it, right? Because you have to drink a lot in order to get, you know, your money's worth it.
Yeah, because it'll be maybe $5-6 for one, and maybe I want two, but it's $20 bottomless. So it's like, well, I don't want $20 worth. So usually I don't do that. If they had bottomless like vodka sodas, that's probably where I'd run into issues. But thankfully they don't do that.
Well, it's usually way more than that, too. It's not $20 generally. Sometimes I think you're thinking of pre-COVID.
They'll do like a 20 or I'll usually see $20 bottomless mimosas because they know bitches can only drink like maybe three or four. Because you got to think mimosas is bubbles in it. So like it fills you up on top of all your food. So most of the time you can't really put down more than four. But anyways.
Well, I saw these on the cruise. It was all you can drink beers and, you know, mimosas and stuff. And it was $50. And I was like, well, that's insane. I don't think I'm going to be able to drink, you know, $50 worth of booze. Even me. By the time I leave this restaurant, that just seems like a waste of money. But I think people are tightening, you know, their budgets now. They're not going out as much. Obviously, things are more expensive. We're on the, you know, verge of World War III right now, closer and closer every day. And people are really picking and choosing their times where they go out and spend this money. And I think that when people go out, they take advantage and they get these things. They pay the $50 and they'll probably sit there for hours and hours, just drinking and drinking and drinking. And then many times it would appear that people are over-serving themselves, which is what you're supposed to do when you do these all-you-can-drink things. But there's this one place, I thought it was here. It said Bay Area restaurants charge $50 vomit fee for guests taking it too far. It's actually San Francisco. Is the
Oakland, the other Bay Area? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Kitchen Story in Oakland's Rockridge neighborhood and Home Plate in San Francisco's Marina District are charging a $50 vomit fee for anyone who throws up in their restaurant. A sign posted at Kitchen Story says, "Dear all mimosa lovers, please drink responsibly and know your limits. A $50 cleaning fee will automatically be included on your tab when you throw up in public places. Thanks for your understanding." I think with it not being here and being in San Francisco, it might not even be the booze. It's probably like fentanyl or something or heroin. Everybody's on that drug over there. They're all slumped over.
It's going to make you throw up, though. I don't know. Are they going to charge you the fee if you're a lady about it? Like, and you throw up? Because I've done that before where I throw up. I didn't make a mess. And it was fine.
Well, it says if you throw up in the public areas.
Oh, okay.
So if you go in the bathroom and vomit and then you purge and then you come back and order another mimosa, I think you're in the clear.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's just the fact of, you know, just vomiting, like turning your head, vomiting, and then ordering another one.
But here's the thing, though. The fact that this has now become a rule means that people were doing that on the regular.
Yes, that's exactly what that means, because there's no way that this just happened organically. This was somebody who turned their head, vomited, and then put their hand up and requested another mimosa. And, you know, service is king right now. You have to serve the patron. The money's not flowing like it used to be, even in San Francisco. And, you know, they had to give it to them, but they had to make these rules. They had to get together, have a meeting and say, how do we get people to stop turning their head, vomiting, and then ordering more?
Vomiting on the table and then ordering more. Yeah.
So I don't know how much a mimosa all you can drink, you know, tour is in San Francisco, but I would imagine it's probably more than $50, or maybe it is $50. And they just add another one on top to kind of keep people from turning their head, vomiting, and then ordering more.
I would say that bottomless mimosas in San Francisco probably average about $40 to $50. Yeah.
That seems right, because it was. Yeah. I think it would be about the same on the cruise ship, right? And that's what it was on the cruise ship.
It was an open bar?
No, that's the only thing on the cruise that you had to pay for was alcohol.
So when you went to the restaurant, you know, do you tip? Like, how does that work?
I think you can if you want to, but you don't have to.
All right, everything's just included. All right, nice.
And I did not. I opted not to tip, but they said it's, you know, option. It's an option. You can if you want to, but you're absolutely not expected to or anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. 813-693-2124 is the voice and text line if you want to get a hold of Anna and myself. thehomemadebroadcast@gmail.com is the email address. You can follow me on social media, home_made_man. Anna, you are still off of social media, right?
Yeah, I've been going on Facebook just to, I don't know. Today I was perving on people that I knew in high school. Or knew it through dance, through my mom. I was looking up weird stuff today. See who had kids. See if they look better than me because I haven't seen some of these people in about 20 years. And I was just curious to see if they look better than me. And surprised they don't. So, But no, I don't post anywhere for any reason.
Yeah,
unless it's with the Bubba Army. So. Yeah,
that's good. That's good. You know, what else happened while we were gone? I really did a pretty good job off of staying offline during my escapade there. But I found out that, you know, the holy war has started.
Yes, it has.
What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, what thoughts are there to be had? I mean, you know what? Honestly, that's a good question, Will, because a lot of people you think would just be in support of not killing innocent lives. But apparently it seems that a lot of people have been sympathizing with the aggressors, which to me was super disturbing, is hearing and seeing some of the things that were being said in Temple Terrace, New York City, Sydney, Australia. I've been following this pretty closely, and it's pretty mind-blowing because you know me, Will. I'm the type of person to be like, racism, this, that, the other. But when you hear people start chanting, gas the Jews, you go, okay, maybe anti-Semitism is still somewhat alive and well. Okay. So, that's kind of a disturbing and unfortunate thing to realize that people in the 21st century, in 2023, still find this kind of behavior justified and acceptable. I don't understand any way you cut it. It's just the stories that I keep reading right before bedtime, which I do not recommend, just seem to be one more horrifying than the next. You know, I really have been trying to stop myself, but you just read these testimonials, but these personal stories of people that have survived or died or you know, come to a kibbutz and see murdered and beheaded babies and children, you're just like, it makes you lose faith in humanity, you know?
So I'm not, I don't know. This is a really confusing one for me because I don't, I know that there are not really any good guys in this thing. I know this is a millennia old, you know, battle really between two cultures. That's
it is and it isn't.
Yeah,
but because, go on.
Yeah, but I mean, they've not liked each other for a long time, since the beginning of time, essentially. And then they also have this thing where this country was put in the middle of the desert in the 40s and started out with these little encampments. And then it gradually it got a little bigger, a little bigger, a little bigger. And now you hear arguments that these people are pushed into this little open air prison. And of course, they're going to fight back. And it was an insane thing that happened. I watched these people on motorized fans with parachutes attached to them riding into a music festival in Israel and opening fire and killing a bunch of hippies in the middle of the desert, which is insane.
Yeah. And I'm sure you saw some of the footage where they're just dancing. It's like 6 a.m. And in the distance, you could see the paragliders about to come in and take it from, you know, probably an awesome experience. They're probably all coming off or on acid, just tripping, having a great time, to some of them, their lives being ended, limbs being shot off, seeing their friends and girlfriends and boyfriends dying in their arms. Like, just had no idea of the impending doom that was about to happen to them. So it's just, it's really effing sad.
What's your thought on, I've heard people say that there's no way that they wouldn't have seen this coming because they have this radar system that you can, if a fly goes through, I mean, that's exaggerating a little bit, that they're going to see it on this radar, that this was maybe an opportune attack, a la maybe 9/11, depending on where you stand on that. But they're going to take full advantage of this unfortunate event and really end this dispute that's been going on for a long time. Now, it's not going to end the land dispute. In fact, it seems like there are really no good guys in this situation, but eventually you're going to have to pick a side. That's what I feel like.
Well, I think that they're both sides have been hypocritical, made mistakes, overstepped boundaries, of course. But at the end of the day, there are better sides. I'll say that. You know, I'm not going to say anyone has, you know, no blood on their hands. And, you know, I was born in Israel. I'm Jewish by culturally Jewish and ethnically Jewish. I'm non-practicing. But most Jews in Israel are secular. So probably about, actually, my dad, who frequents Israel, thankfully was not there during the time of this invasion, but was there in April, and his best friend has lived there for probably close to 40 years. So we actually had him call into Bubba's show yesterday. Him and his wife were talking live from Tel Aviv. So it was interesting to hear from them and ask them all the questions about, you know, kind of like what you said about that oversight, where it's like the intelligence community there is, you know, one of the best in the world. And this was apparently happening right underneath their nose, and they didn't pick it up, or they did pick it up and just thought that they were posturing. That's what I kept reading, is they didn't think anything of it, because you got to think, like, if you intercept 2000 different invasions, attacks, aggressions, whatever, you know, the one that slips through, everyone is going to blame you for. But unfortunately, this one was a big one. This wasn't just a few rockets. This was land, sea, air, rocket invasion that I think right now, what is it, over 1,100 Israelis? I want to say 2,500 total people have died. I mean, those are big numbers. So,
yeah, and we've only just begun. This is going to be a long attrition, much like Ukraine and Russia going at it right now.
Yeah.
I have a really feeling of dread, and I don't know if it's my natural pessimistic type of, I think I'm a realist, maybe not a pessimist, but I feel like something's really bad's going to happen soon. And
like, nuke wise, or
Well, maybe not even that, but just like, I'm worried about, the main thing I'm worried about is because our southern border was so open, even though many people claim that it was not.
I know
not,
what you're talking about, yeah.
That there's a lot of people who might be antithetical to to this place that are going to, because I think the guy, the main guy from Hamas called for, you know, people all over the world to start shooting. So I'm concerned with the undocumented folks that came through, where they stand, where their loyalties are, if they have any. And I have a feeling of dread that within the next few weeks, we're going to start getting it here now, too.
Yeah. My name is Juan.
Yeah. Well, it was so weird because you saw at the border, it was like, yeah, there was the Central American folks. It wasn't really Mexicans. It was Central America, some South Americans. And then it was like Russians and Ukrainians and Africans.
And there like, there were people, one of whom I was like, okay, that guy's from Pakistan. So that's interesting.
And it's not like this is, they've apprehended, you know, registered ISIS fighters at the border before, years ago, with it being so, you know, that happened. I mean, like, it just, of course it did. Come on. And then you wonder where some of these, how did you even get to Mexico or wherever you landed? Obviously somebody's shipping you in and paying for you to get there. All these people seem to be men in their 20s and 30s. I rarely see, you know, families and women and children. So you see them mixed in, but I would say it's overwhelmingly male fighting age. So I don't know. Maybe this is part of the plan all along. I don't know. It's just go through the crap, and then we'll have one globalized world once we're all done. But a lot of people are going to probably perish in the meantime.
Yeah. No, I've heard similar concerns that there are sleeper cells of these Islamic extremists in pockets of the United States because of the porous border in the South. You know, it's weird. Like, I was thinking about religious extremists in that term. It's like, I almost don't even want to call them that, because everybody who's not an extremist is a poser. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you decided you wanted to dial down your Judaism or dial down your Islam or dial down your Christianity, like, you're not the one. These people are taking it literally. Like, they read the book and they go, oh, these are the rules right here. This is what we can do in the name of Allah or in the name of Jesus or in the name of Yahweh, whatever. So when I see that sort of stuff and they're like, oh, they're radicalized, it's like, no, they're just like what Islam like is. And everybody else is like dialing it down because they're fitting it into a more modern civil society. So
I don't know. I mean, can you be, you could be Muslim without being a Islamicist, right? Where you don't need the caliphate.
In the book, it does talk about not allowing people to live that don't declare Allah as their God. I mean, it's a pretty violent book. You're about things you're, you know, it has compassion for people who think and feel the way that you do. But outside of that, it seems like those who do not worship me as, you know, as the God or the holy prophet, they're fair game to be butchered to death.
Well, you got to pay the tax too, right? Isn't there a tax that you can pay, money? If you want to live there, not follow the caliphate, you have to pay a tax, I'm pretty sure. Or they'll cut your head off.
Maybe you can, I'm sure you can, anybody can be bribed, but it's kind of hard to bribe, like, let's say, I don't know, the royal family in Saudi Arabia when they've got trillions of dollars. You know, they're not really too concerned with your,
well,
with your
it's in the book. I haven't read the Quran, so I don't know, but I think that was part of what I heard was in the book. I don't know.
You can get to pay off. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that that's part of it. I haven't read the Quran either, but I have looked up passages, like, because I'm like, it doesn't say that in the book, and then it's like, yeah, it does, and I look it up, and sure enough, it is in there, and the Bible's, you know, no better in some ways, but it seems like they've dialed it back which maybe they're not true followers, but well, also they're raping little boys too. So they got their own deal going on, a little different.
But I think that's,
you know, not good, but better than what they're doing, than what Hamas is doing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the point, right? Is like you can be like a dialed back Christian, you can be a dialed back Muslim too, and not follow the book as closely as you probably should by the letter, but you still consider yourself part of that group. Like a reformed, moderate.
Right. You know. But then that's not like, then you are changing the interpretation of whatever your religious text is to fit your new life.
Okay. I see.
I'm in favor of that. But again, because I'm an atheist, I'm like, it's all BS. Mm-hmm. Like you're just cherry picking. And thank you for cherry picking and not, you know, killing people off the street anymore. But also, it's all dumb.
Cherry picking my head off its body. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I get what you're saying then, that everybody's kind of a poser then, not really following the letter of the law in their book. Yeah.
And those are the evil ones.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, you want to say that like Islam isn't violent. It's like, okay, have you read the book or have you at least investigated into what it calls for, what it says? And again, like I said, the Bible's no better. So, but thankfully it seems like much of the Western world has dialed it back big time. So
yeah, at least for that. I don't know. I'm pretty not unbiased. I definitely have a bias to everything, but I've listened to people on both sides, very fine people on both sides, and I see their points and their arguments, and I don't know where to go with this one. I don't know who's the right ones. Like I said, I feel like there's nothing but bad guys, but we're kind of going to be forced to kind of pick one of the bad guys to join up with at a certain point. Worldwide, where we're kind of splitting up into factions, countries are kind of jumping in here, picking their sides. I would say China is probably going to go into Taiwan within weeks. I mean, mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they right now? America's on the hook for, you know, this war in the Middle East now, obviously, because we're a strong partner of Israel, maybe the only one in the world. And so obviously going to be busy with that. We're already busy with Ukraine. And I don't know. I think this is probably going to be one where boots are going to be on the ground for America again. We're going to be back at war in the Middle East. And who knows? The other one went 23 years, I think. This one will probably be something similar to that. Generations of people fighting in this thing. And hopefully, hope to God, that it doesn't end up with hellfire raining down, you know, nuclear arms on society and civilization and just totally ending the whole thing. Because this one is the one, right? This is the biblical one, the war in the Middle East, that God comes back supposedly at the end of this one.
Yeah. When we talked to the Israelis yesterday, my dad's friends, they were very concerned about Iran. The involvement in Iran, because the Israelis can handle the Palestinians. Like they can level it. The Israelis have nukes. You know, they're often pulled back because of the international reputation that they have of being oppressors and the Israeli apartheid or whatever. So, you know, they could easily pull back or easily demolish them, but they don't because, you know, most Israelis, they're a democracy and they act civilly. You know, when they go in, they usually try not to, they don't seek out women and children. They try to find out where the militant strongholds are and target those. Yes, there's collateral damage. Yes, women and children are going to die, of course. But they don't seek it out. They're not taking hostages. They're not doing any of that sort of stuff. They're not doing like crusade level medieval kind of stuff where they're decapitating babies and then putting it on Twitter for everybody to see. So, you know, we're kind of dealing with a different set of rules. You know, this isn't really the rules of war. The last time that there was a huge conflict, the Yom Kippur War in 73, you know, Egypt and Syria invaded on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, you know, because they weren't expecting it or whatever the case may be. Everyone's fasting and hungry and praying. But that was army versus army. You know what I mean? Like those were two militaries fighting. It wasn't boots on the ground, killing people at music festivals, going into homes, taking children, taking hostages, chopping off heads of babies. You know, this is kind of a level of violence that even most Israelis who have seen many wars and been part of many wars have just unfathomable, like have not seen. You know, they're like, we've never seen this level of massacre before. Just absolutely gruesome medieval type stuff. So, yeah, you know, the Israelis, I'm sure, have done things they shouldn't have done, but I don't think there's really anything that can justify people going in and slaughtering infants. Like, I don't see any justification for that. And that's not just because I'm a Jewish person or because I live in Israel. That should just be a blanket statement. You know, you go in somewhere and you start decapitating babies on a kibbutz that have done nothing wrong except be born. That's some next level ish.
So, you know? Yeah, that is horrendous.
Grandma and then posting pictures of her dead body on Facebook. And that's how her family finds out she's dead. That's next level kind of stuff. So
it's not. I certainly wouldn't put it past, you know, young men who are propagandized like that to do a heinous act like that. I just know that there's historical receipt of sometimes atrocities being documented, presented to the world, and then them being fabricated as well. So it's really hard for me to just, I know it's been confirmed by some news agencies, but I go back to, you know, Twitter's good with this stuff, with bringing things to your memory that you probably forgot about. I was a little kid during this time. And when the Gulf War I started, there was testimony by a woman who was anonymous, a girl, who said that Iraqi troops came in and started killing babies in an NCU unit. And that's kind of started the vindication to get boots on the ground in Iraq. Yeah. And then we found out later that this was, you know, fabricated by the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States, and it was his daughter that testified it never happened. Did this thing happen with the babies? It very well could have. I could totally see it happening, and I would not be surprised, but when you get, I don't know, I just say just be careful. They're trying to grab your emotion, and that is something that will really grab your emotion, and it's really hard. I think you just got to be level-headed and go, okay, I don't know, and let's not jump to any conclusions here, but even you were
assuming that story was fake after that woman came forward and said it wasn't true. Like that could be a cover up. Like you don't know anything. Like
yeah, you don't know anything.
You don't know anything. Like, so yeah. To be like, oh, well they came out and they said they lied, so that was really the truth. It's like, okay, yeah, you don't know. You don't know. Sure. Absolutely. Was I there? Did I see decapitated babies? No. Am I going to seek that stuff out on the internet? No. And even if I did see it, how do I know it's real? I understand all of that. But on some level, after it's been verified by multiple sources, you just, again, I hate saying you have to assume sometimes it's something that you read is happening. People are dying. There are people in hospitals that are missing legs. And again, maybe it's all a psyop. I can't guarantee 100%, but I truly don't feel that it is, just because there's so many confirmed cases and testimonies of people and people in hospitals that are getting interviewed and saying that they pretended that they were dead and hid under other dead bodies so that they themselves wouldn't be murdered. So, yeah, you never know. I agree with you. And there was a moment where I wanted to like yell at you, but I'm like, honest, stop. You know, you're right. You don't know. You never know ever, 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 ever. But if we can just assume that what things are happening are true, then I think it's safe to say that there's a better side. Again, Israelis are not completely, you know, there's blood on everyone's hands, of course, of course. And I've been doing a deep dive into the history because I didn't want to just be the person who's from Israel or was born in Israel and who's Jewish, who just sides with the Israelis. Like I really wanted to understand the deep history of the region. And so I've been doing a deep dive the last couple of days. And it just seems like to be somewhat blatantly clear that, you know, especially Hamas and groups like that, they're not interested in a two-party state. So it's really hard for Israeli diplomats to go, listen, you keep yelling at us to give them land and have a two-party state. They're in their charter, much like in the charter of BLM to, you know, disintegrate the nuclear family. In the charter of Hamas is, you know, exterminate Jews, eradicate Israel. That's their mission statement.
I've heard that too.
Hey, well, how do you do diplomacy with people like that? You don't, you know?
And on the other side, I've heard that these diplomats have done everything they can to not make it happen on the Israeli side too. Scott Horton, antiwar.com, is a good person to follow if you want some nuance on that. I don't know, Anna. All I could say is that it's probably going to get a lot worse, and it's a damn shame. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say something crazy. War is bad, and we shouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's bad. But also, and again, assuming everything is true with the Hamas thing, because that's all we can do is assume something is true, right? Like you read something. Is the Ukrainian war even a thing? I don't know. I'm not there, but we have to assume, you know, when we talk about it, that something is happening over there. But, if all of this is true, there's probably not going to be a Gaza Strip for much longer
they're going to
level it, and they already started too. So it's disturbing. And also I know that there's been a call for, at least some people in Congress have suggested that Israel shouldn't retaliate.
That's how it's being covered. And this is what, and I saw a lot of similarities. I know we're just about out of time here, but I see a lot of similarities. This is why I don't trust the press, because I see a lot of similarities between Israel and the United States. And I see it in places like, I've seen how they cover Israelis' atrocities, where they go, they shot a 14-year-old boy, and then you find out that he was stabbing people or had a bomb strapped to him or something, and sometimes maybe not, but I know for a fact that, you know, you check in on some of these things a little bit down the line and you see that they're not really telling you the truth about that situation. And then you see instances here in the United States with, like, Jacob Blake, for example, in Wisconsin, where, oh, they shot an unarmed person of color again. And then you find out that he had a knife and was trying to kidnap his children. So there's just a lot of similarities with how media covers these things. And they seem to be in the pocket for certain alliances in some cases. And it's not the act of terrorism that happened. It's the response that's the real issue, because Israel has a superpower, really, at least their military
region,
is.
Yeah.
So, and these guys have paratrooper, you know, they have fans strapped to a parachute with machine guns, and these guys have like, you know, phosphorus and nuclear bombs. And so it's not really a fair fight necessarily, but I don't know. It's bad. It's going to get worse. And I hope that we're around next week to do another podcast. Anna, thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoy your karate class. Yeah, good times, good times. Way to end the show from Booze Cruise to World War III. But I hope you enjoyed. I hope you check us out on our respective radio shows. You can catch me on the Johnny B Show, 8 to 10 p.m., Monday through Friday, 10 to midnight, sorry, on Wednesday. And other than that, during the Lightning Games, more content on HMB Radio and willsyoutube.com. Stay tuned if you're listening on Radio St. Pete. Frank Rivera's Jazz Show is up next. Go rate the podcast, give it 5 stars, and I appreciate that. For Anna Hummel, my name is Will Kuntz. See ya.
You have found the Homemade Broadcast on RadioSaintPete.com.